The National Security Agency is the repository of much of the government's cybersecurity chops. NSA has its own cyber threats to worry about as well, but it also advises other agencies and the White House on government-wide and industry cyber issues. The point man for that is Philip Quaid, Special Assistant for Cybersecurity to the NSA Director.
I have two macro roles. The first role is to provide advice to the Director of NSA. Not that he needs tons of advice. He's a smart man on his own. But what I try and bring to him with other leaders of NSA, opportunities or risks or integrated insights that he might not be getting, so he can make the macro decisions that helps NSA get to a better spot.
And let's talk about cyber activities at the NSA to the extent you can. You don't have to tell us what firewalls you have in place and what their IP addresses is. Probably the bad guys know that already. But what kinds of best practices do you find work in an agency where secrecy is really the paramount consideration?
Right. I understand. One of the unique values of NSA is that it has decent insight into what our foreign adversaries aspire to do to others and what they're capable of doing to others. So we try and use those insights into the adversary, into the threat, to inform not only NSA's cybersecurity defenses, but we try and take that information, that knowledge, and convey it to others so they can better posture themselves for preparing against malicious cyber activity.
And adversary sounds like a pretty broad word these days.
Right. An adversary can be a nation state like Russia and China, or an adversary could be individuals, even all the way down to an insider threat. Some people ask me, what keeps me up at, based on what we know about the foreign threat, does that keep you up at night? And I sometimes say, no, in fact, I sleep like a baby. But what I wake up every 2 hours in a panic and I'm screaming. Because we believe that there are some nations who are very, very capable and very, very motivated to do bad things against not just the NSA or the U.S. government, but the nation at large.
And there's always the insider threat, which NSA has learned and a lot of agencies has learned. In your case, it was the Edward Snowden. I imagine that had a big effect on how people think about and also try to prevent insider threat situations.
It did. When the contractor did his dirty deed a couple years ago and then fled to China and Russia, a lot of people first thought, perhaps NSA had broken the law, but they quickly saw that NSA wasn't breaking any laws. Everything we did was consistent with the rules and oversight of the Congress, the President, and the courts. But then they realized that NSA was doing its job at a very, very large speed and scale, high speed and scale. And we've since used that credibility about doing technology and operational things at speed and scale. And we talked to people about the need to embrace, from a cybersecurity perspective, embrace automation and integration, because the only way you can address the problems of speed and scale of an adversary is by using automation and integration of technologies for cybersecurity.
And your role at NSA involves not just technology, but also research, operations, dealing with the workforce. How does all that manifest itself?
It's just like cybersecurity is a team sport, meaning it takes the government, it takes the private sector, it takes individuals to get it done. You need to approach it from the different facets you just mentioned. It takes a sound research program. It takes good practices by the people. It takes well-trained people. It takes the right technology, and then you need the right types of experts to put it into operation.
Now, the NSA has a workforce like every other federal agency, and notwithstanding the clearances and so forth you need to work there, I imagine you have a cybersecurity training and education and awareness program just like anybody else should.
We do. Cybersecurity is an individual responsibility in addition to a corporate responsibility. So corporately, there are rules you need to follow, such as mandatory training every year. We have passwords that are very long and very frequently changed. But it also starts with the training of the workforce as well. And training is something that's not unique to NSA. Training is something that lots of other organizations take advantage of. You might know of an initiative called the Centers for Academic Excellence. It's something that NSA is involved with, along with some of our partners, such as Department of Homeland Security. And what we're helping to do is shape the undergraduate, and in some cases, graduate curriculums of colleges and universities so that they are turning out a highly trained and highly educated workforce. And then that's a tide that floats all boats. What sets a workforce, and not only can help future government organizations' missions, but also can help the private sector as well.
All right. And with respect to what NSA does in terms of advising the larger government on cybersecurity and cybersecurity training, describe some of those activities.
Sure. NSA is a Department of Defense and Intelligence Community organization, but we also have the opportunity to advise at the national strategy and national policy level. And to their credit, folks like the National Security Council down at the White House, they want to make sure that as the White House forms national cyber strategy and national cyber policy, they want to make sure that those strategies and policies are well-grounded in reality. So what NSA brings to the table is the realities of technology and operations, and then they use those ground truths to form policies that work not only for the government but for the nation at large.
We're speaking with Philip Quaid, Special Assistant for Cyber to the National Security Agency Director. What have we learned in the past few years with respect to the morphing of cybersecurity from the days when it was simply a matter of network perimeter protection with firewalls, which is really a mainframe throwback to when they used to call it computer security?
That's a great question. It used to be the day that computer security or cybersecurity simply meant hardening your systems and having good training and good practices. But it's since become a layered strategy. So it's not only good the fundamental hygiene, and it starts with that, but then you also need to put people, on-net operators, who are on your network looking for evidence of adversary penetrations. And then on top of that, you need to embrace large degrees of commercial off-the-shelf products to leverage the innovative things coming out of Silicon Valley and elsewhere, analytics that can find evidence of malicious activity and then detect and mitigate that at cyber-relevant speed.
Because it seems like agencies are starting to learn, I guess as corporations are, that the older way of looking for a profile of a file, say, that might be malicious is okay so far as it goes, but looking for activity on the network that might be executed by that file can get you to mitigate problems sooner and faster and maybe more comprehensively.
You're right. The best cybersecurity defenses are one that are not just ones that look for previous activity and stop subsequent identical type activities, but the most sophisticated cyber defenses look for patterns of activity, behaviors of activity that indicate that something bad is happening or might be happening in the near future, and then takes preemptive action to that. We call that oftentimes active cyber defense, the ability to detect and mitigate in cyber relevant time.
And just to get back to the adversaries trying to get into the NSA or other IC intelligence community agencies, do you spend a lot of time observing what those people are trying to do, Russia, Romania, China, and so forth? And I imagine it's almost like a test of wills and brains, almost a game, only with real consequences.
Right. I wouldn't characterize it as a cartoon, spy versus spy. The Russians and the Chinese are extraordinarily sophisticated adversaries in cyberspace. They're both experienced and well-resourced and have good tradecraft. And one of our jobs, being part of the intelligence community, is trying to get as many insights we can against those foreign adversaries, both the nation states, like we just talked about, but some of the other countries and individual actors as well. For example, there's terrorist threat in cyberspace, and that they're not confined to an individual nation state. You still have to glean as much wisdom as you can from intelligence and then convey that information to those who can put it to use for defending their own networks.
And it's not just a function of the intelligence community, although you might be the most sensitive to it, but Commerce Department, Energy Department, Homeland Security, they may not, well, I don't want to characterize them, but perhaps the IC has the most well-defined sense of what that adversary is really all about.
I'd like to think that the intelligence community is as good as or better than most in understanding the foreign adversary's capabilities, but others have insights as well. For example, the private sector operates in defend networks, and they see threats and they see vulnerabilities that we might not see in intelligence. So one of the reasons we often talk about cybersecurity as being a team sport is the need for each of us to share the insights that we get in our own mission space with each other. With that shared awareness, we can take our own actions locally in the context of what others are seeing. So information sharing at cyber-relevant speed is an important national strategy and is why the White House and this Congress have each spoken on the need for greater automated information sharing across the public and private sector.
Now, there is a regime in place for sharing information between the private sector and various federal agencies that correspond to that sector or domain. Most of them are Homeland Security, but energy is one, transportation is one. They've got their collection. How much does the NSA get involved there? Because it may not occur to you know, the average corporate executive to ring up the NSA if they have a breach that could be serious?
So there's two things. The first is the part of your question, I think, is about information sharing. And you're right. The private sector has our critical infrastructures have certain sector-specific agencies that when there's something worth sharing within their sector, for example, in the energy sector, they'd go to the Department of Energy. If it's the financial sector, Department of Treasury. And other sectors might go to the Department of Defense or Department of Homeland Security. In all those cases, though, information is then shared when needed and when appropriate across the U.S. government. They're not disclosing the personal information of U.S. citizens or anything like that. But if there's an incident that's worth knowing, it's shared across the United States government in the appropriate channels so that we can understand how that incident relates to others, again, so it creates context.
So that knowledge that might come in through energy or transportation does get propagated across the federal landscape.
Correct, and I don't want to imply that all information is forwarded. So something might be unique to a sector, and that's dealt with just between the sector-specific agency and its sharer. But other information about threats or incidents, yes, that's typically shared across the partners who have a need to know and who are able to take that information and turn it into something actionable. So, for example, such information might be automatically shared with the Department of Homeland Security, the FBI, and the NSA, the Department of Defense, and perhaps others.
And for the last several years, people have been thinking about the critical infrastructure, and information sharing between operators of critical infrastructure, mostly in the private sector, but some federal and some even state and local operate utilities in some cases, and the federal government. What's the latest going on there with respect to how people are looking at the critical infrastructure and the definitions of what's critical?
So sounds like you're well-versed in this area. As you might know, there's a generally accepted definition of 16 or 18 critical infrastructures in the United States. And it turns out that you and I as citizens are all greatly reliant on this critical infrastructure. So whether it be for electricity or water or IT or transportation, et cetera. And though the vast majority of critical infrastructures are owned and operated by the private sector, we think there's room for increased public-private collaboration on critical infrastructure security. That might simply be as minimalist as information exchanges about what techniques might be used to better secure critical infrastructure, but it also might be something as important and urgent as increased public-private collaboration, practicing collaborating on the security of infrastructure. So, for example, in times of crisis, perhaps a critical infrastructure might turn to the government and say, can you help me out? And the answer will almost certainly be, you know, if authorized and appropriate, we'll try to help you out. But you don't want to start flat-footed, so you can't go from 0 to 60 immediately upon a request. So perhaps a good technique might be to practice that type of collaboration now between the U.S. government and critical infrastructure so that when there is times of crisis, we already have some relationships and practices that we can rely on to get up to a running start.
Can we say that the Stuxnet episode of several years ago maybe taught the lesson that even if you go back to an air gap in SCADA systems and the internet, which that's been breached, I mean, because of convenience and a lot of reasons, that's not an assurance that something bad can't happen to a SCADA system, even if it's not connected to the internet.
Absolutely. You know, there was a day when the air gap was one of the best ways to do cybersecurity, but today the air gap's overrated. The widespread adoption of Wi-Fi and other wireless means of communications means that the air gap is no longer the primary ways to do advanced cybersecurity. It takes active sensing and active mitigation to detect evidence of risks and then be able to mitigate those risks in cyber relevant time. Related, as you noted, the critical infrastructures use a type of technology classed as SCADA systems or industrial control systems. Increasingly, those types of systems have both an IT, information technology, component to it. So as SCADA systems become more linked into and dependent upon IT, that increases the attack posture to critical infrastructures. So that argues even more for greater collaboration among folks who do traditionally the separate type of ICS SCADA work with those who do IT security.
We're speaking with Philip Quaid, Special Assistant for Cyber to the National Security Agency Director. Which particular sector of critical infrastructure do you feel might be the most vulnerable?
I'll start with by giving a shout out to the financial sector and the energy sector, who are considered by most to be leaders in their fields. And then maybe directly answer your question by saying that though there are 16 or 18, generally recognized critical infrastructures, most people would have a top five or so of saying that we need to focus on first two I just mentioned: financial, energy, transportation, water, and IT. Don't get me wrong, you could probably argue there's a fifth or a sixth that ought to be on that short list, but you can't do them all at once. Those probably would be on my priority list.
I guess if you can preserve the money, then you can pretty much preserve everything else.
Spoken like a good capitalist.
At some level. And I want to get very specific and ask you about phishing, because that seems to be the universal way now that the bad things are happening. And even sophisticated people are being confronted with very sophisticated phishing attacks that could fool anybody. What is the latest thinking on getting around that whole topic?
Right. So a few years ago, if you'd asked that question, you would have talked about thumb drives as being the nemesis. And then after that, you might have talked about clicking on malware. Phishing, you're right. That happens to be the most prominent and productive way that adversaries are getting into systems today. And it's counting on the frailty of human beings, right? We're all busy. We're all distracted. Perhaps we're not all as trained as well as we should be. And so our adversaries are taking advantage of that frailness of the wetware up top. However, not all is bad. You can counter that with better training, but it also gets back to the idea of using increased amounts of automation to compensate for some of those human frailties. So that if we do succumb to a phishing or a whaling attack, perhaps your system can detect that and mitigate the consequence before the really bad consequences happen.
All right, so final thoughts from someone who has a really broad view of cybersecurity in the country and who says you sleep like a baby, waking up 2 hours in fear, screaming every 2 hours. What do you think the government most needs to know at this point?
I think we need to worry about a couple of things internationally. One, we need to worry about some of those major adversaries I mentioned earlier, the Russians and the Chinese, and there are others out there as well. And also internationally, I think we need some generally accepted international norms of behavior in cyberspace so that countries aren't out there doing things that are just counter to free exchange of ideas or capitalism, et cetera. So that's on the international side. On the domestic side, I think we need to have increased information sharing among those who are in the cybersecurity business. I think we need to have greater public-private collaboration. I think we need to leverage higher degrees of automation and integration of Koch products. And then lastly, I think back to your previous point, I think we need to come up with a strategy to counter the frailties that all we human beings possess so that we don't work against all these other more sophisticated techniques that are in place.
Surround that wetware with some good solid hardware.
Yes.
Philip Quaid is Special Assistant for Cyber to the National Security Agency Director and Chief of the NSA Cyber Task Force. Share this interview with colleagues. Go to federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive and click Share with Friends.